Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Wedgehead Pinball Podcast. My name is Alan, the host of the Wedgehead Pinball Podcast and co-owner of the Portland Pinball Bar Wedgehead. I'm joined today in the basement studio of my co-host, the Water Boy.
Hey, how's it going, Alan? Today, we're joined by our friends down in Tempe, Arizona, the owners and operators of Electric Bat, Kale and Rachel.
Hello.
Hey, what's happening? Good. It's absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invite. We are big fans of the podcast, so we've been looking forward to this.
And of bar.
We appreciate that.
I actually haven't been, but Rachel has been.
I went shortly after you guys opened.
Nice.
I remember that. What show were you up for?
Must have been Portland Retro.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
That's a fun show. That's not really, like, for anybody not in the Portland area or hasn't heard of it, it's not much of a pinball show, but it's a really cool show with just a good variety of stuff.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You were there a couple months after we opened, and then which will lead me to the first question I have for y'all. It's, what made you take the plunge and open your own arcade, and what year did y'all open?
I was asked multiple times until I caved and agreed to open an arcade inside of a dive bar, and I opened it 5 years ago, so that would be 2018. Yep. September of 2018.
She did this before we were together, so this was her thing.
Oh, really? Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Kale got sucked into it.
Yep. You got hoodwinked.
Yep.
But y'all used to work together at Marco, correct? Or is that not correct?
Yes, that's where we met, but Kale physically worked there in South Carolina, and I traveled around to shows, so I was still based out of Phoenix. We didn't actually meet in person until a couple of weeks before we got married.
Right. Well, that's a true story. We actually met on, Zoom or
Slack or something, one of those.
Whatever the video conferencing stuff Marco was using back then.
I was under the assumption that you were both in South Carolina and then relocated to Arizona, but I guess you were already in Arizona, Rachel. So
yeah.
Got Kale to move out and open up this arcade, mm-hmm. which is, you actually now have two locations. You have the flagship one in Tempe, just outside of Phoenix, for those listeners that don't know where that is. And then you have another smaller one up in Flagstaff. That's a couple hours away, isn't it?
Correct. About 2.5 hours and 7,000 feet to the north of us.
7,000, yeah, in elevation.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, north, both, like, up and
yep.
There are two norths.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy because in the famous Phoenix summertime, you know, we can get into 110, 120, no big deal. Mm-hmm. But we're kind of lucky because we can drive 2 hours north and it's like a 20, sometimes 30 degree difference.
That's pretty sweet.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That brings up an interesting point of, like, if you have a secondary location 2 hours away, is how often do you have to go up there, and what's that commute and work schedule like to maintain all the games up there?
I guess luckily Flagstaff is a much smaller town. So the Phoenix area is about 5 million people and Flagstaff is 76,000 people. So the machines down here get a lot of play and we need to be at the arcade basically every day.
Mm-hmm.
And in Flagstaff, we can go, we can go a few times a month and that's plenty. The commute is awesome. We listen to podcasts and, go on a little road trip. It's a beautiful drive and, it's like...
Yeah, Flagstaff is beautiful. I mean, Flagstaff is a beautiful... You start getting into northern Arizona, and that's like an entirely different state that I don't think a lot of people realize. You have mountains, you got snow, and it's different than the desert and the cactuses that people think of when they think of Arizona.
You figure the elevation is, 2,000 feet higher than Denver? So that's...
See?
That's getting pretty thin.
Arizona's a wild state.
You think that affects the pinball physics at all? You think the ball, goes a little faster up there? Not as much air resistance,
I'm sure some players will say that. They'll be like, oh, the ball's fucked up. The elevation's messing the ball up.
Yeah. I'm sure that's something I need to adjust.
Yeah, you need 6.4 degrees. The bubble levels are going to get affected.
So I have... both of your locations are tied to old school bars and venues. And I just want to know a little bit, I think you alluded to it, Rachel, is how does that work on the business end? Are y'all subleasing from Yucca Taproom themselves, or do you have your own leases on your space? How does that collaboration work?
It's a lease. I guess I pay our rent check to Yucca every month. So it's one big lease and separate spots within the building, I guess is the easiest way to explain
it. Sort of subleasing then.
Do you have different operating hours than Yucca then?
No.
No, they're open 365.
It's a continuous space. Oh, that's, yeah, Alan had told me that in the past.
Yeah, so this is how it started. The guys from Yucca 5 years ago, actually probably 6 years ago, they started noticing these, you know, the, I guess we shouldn't say barcade scene, but yeah, coming around. They, you know, they wanted, they, there was one very cool arcade bar called Cobra.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in the valley here. And so they're like, man, we want to do that. So they actually approached the owner of Cobra, and he said, you need to talk to Rachel.
Oh, so, no, really?
And,
cool.
Yeah, and Rachel's doing her own thing. You know, she's a professional oil painter. She was doing a lot of other stuff and had no, she didn't want to get into this space of running arcades. They had to track her down at ZapCon, which is the big arcade and pinball convention here in the Valley. And they finally cornered her while she was working on a machine. And she was like, who are you guys? And she's like, oh, Yucca. Yeah, I used to go there in high school. What's up? And they were like, we want to partner with you on an arcade. And she's like, you know, I'm kind of busy right now. Let me come and we'll set a date and I'll come talk to you. She was originally just a consultant.
I see.
She met with the owners of Yucca and laid out everything. She's hyper organized. She laid out everything and told them, I mean, down to the final nut and bolt, what you need to do to run a successful arcade. And they were like, yeah, that's too much. What do you need from us for you to do it?
Well, that was very wise of them, too.
Yeah, that was probably the best thing they could have done, was get somebody that actually knows how this shit works.
100%. So she started out, they cleared out their office, which was right next to the bar. She put machines in there, and over the 5 years, it's kept growing, and she's had to have two expansions. The last expansion happened New Year's Eve, I guess.
A year ago.
Yeah. And that's the biggest expansion, where we were actually able to put 60 pinball machines, wow, and probably around 20 video games or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's how that whole thing happened.
That's pretty cool. And Rachel, did you own the games like that you put in there first, or how'd that work?
Yeah, I owned a bunch of games.
Okay.
So you were a collector?
There were a few from a friend, but I already owned plenty of pinball machines.
Gotcha. And yeah, that's kind of like the biggest step, is it's like not having to put all the capital in right up front for something like that makes it so much more plausible, I guess.
Definitely. If you had to open up just a from scratch arcade, that would be,
it's so much,
insanely expensive and overwhelming, and you would have no idea what you don't know. I mean, you all know because you know.
Yeah.
But the people,
oh yeah,
you know, if this is not something you have been doing for a little while, it's a big hit. Steep learning curve. There's a steep learning curve when you know what you're doing.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. We'll get into that. I mean, but I get asked, and I'm sure y'all do all the time, because I hear you answer it on your own podcast, which we should mention already. The Electric Bat has their own pinball podcast. So if you're listening to this episode, go check out theirs.
A very fun podcast from obviously other operators, which Alan and I are always interested in. So we both listen to your guys' podcast quite a bit.
Yep.
Thank you.
Cool.
Likewise.
Yeah.
This is really a cool thing that I think we both kind of started at the same time, but we released, I think, earlier than you did.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys are hearing the same thing. As soon as we started releasing these podcasts, we didn't expect, you know, so many people to be into it, but there are no podcasts talking about, you know, operate the business side of this.
Mm-hmm.
And people are so interested in it. And we always hear, you know, I'm sick and tired of news and rumors podcasts.
Yep. That was the biggest goal. I think when Alan approached me about it, he's like, I want to do a podcast that doesn't ever talk about rumors.
Yeah. I'm not plugged in. I don't want to be plugged in. It's like, I want the games to come out. And we got an arcade to run, man. Like, I just, I got shit to do. Like, and I'd wanted to do a podcast for a while, from the operator's perspective. And I remember I bought the mics and we had recorded our first test episode and I was editing it. And then I saw that you guys had released yours and I was like, oh shit. Well, I guess we don't even need to do this no more. But we were like, well, I guess we'll keep going. And
I'm glad you guys did.
We seem to be on the same trajectory.
Yeah. And we opened our arcades very close. I mean, we opened the same year as the Electric Bat. You know, you were there.
I think you guys opened like in July, was it, or something?
No, we opened in September.
9/11.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So you were.
So we opened September 16th.
Yeah.
So we were like a week later.
Wow.
And then we started our podcasts on the same, basically the same day.
Without even communicating, which I think is interesting.
Very in sync.
But I want to talk to you about, speaking of things that people don't know, I think there's a big one that I always hear about with people operating games. And there's two main types of operating. There's what we do and what you do, which is like you have a flagship arcade. You own and operate your own machines. And then you take all of that money. Whatever comes out is for the business. Now you have higher operating costs because you have a lease and you have insurance and you have all these business expenses. But then there's also the old school version, which is like a route. My business partner has been pinball operator for about, he doesn't even know when he started, but it's like 16, 17 years, maybe even longer.
Well, I think longer than that.
He still has a route. So like he still has locations all over the Portland metro area. And then Wedgehead's like our flagship, and that's what we're partners on. But that's a whole different thing. And when you're doing a route, whenever people go to a place and it's just a regular bar or pizza shop or whatever, and somebody has pinball machines in there, there's some operator that owns those games. It's very unusual that like a pizza shop owner would also be the operator. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but it's rare. So it's usually an operator running those games on a route. And then the reason why the bar would agree to have them there is that they get a split of the coin take, right? What I've realized is, with the rise of new arcades and new pinball operators, I've been hearing from talking to other operators is that the splits have changed. So in Portland, forever, it was 50-50, like operator to location owner, which is low. And now I think we're running at 60-40 is like the standard Portland split, more or less. And I heard you mention on one of your podcasts that it was that you don't really do it, but that you wouldn't do it for less than 75-25. Do you feel like that's a normal split in your region?
Well, I honestly have no idea what other operators are getting. I think 50-50 is still pretty much the standard. But for Kale and I, like, we have a couple of people that have some machines inside Electric Bat. That is a 50-50 split. And we do 50-50 because we do ton of marketing, have huge tournaments. You know, you're not just going in there.
Oh, for sure.
You're a pinball dedicated location, like the games are actually going to get played there
and taken care of, right? So we're also
And I didn't even think about that. You can get the balls unstuck and stuff, like, just from an earning perspective, that's huge to have people there,
right? If, you know, rubbers break or whatever happens, then we will fix it. So it's not just going to sit dark in a corner until somebody decides to let you know. But I just think the reason for us not wanting to do anything lower than a 75-25 is just because it's a lot of work, and we're already really busy.
Yeah, totally.
And we take very good care of our machines. So we wouldn't be the type of operators, you know, where you go to the bar 3 weeks in a row and the machine is dark, right? It's, our stuff is usually fixed within 24 hours.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I experienced that when I was at your arcade. I was very impressed. I mean, I didn't get to meet y'all there, but it was right before your expansion. So it felt very Wedgehead sized at the time, and now it's massive, and I haven't been back yet, but I'm looking forward to it. You can tell when you walk into a place, every time I travel, I'm looking for, and honestly, I'll play broken fucking game. Like, I'll play, like, because I'm just interested in just seeing pinball machines in different locations around the wild. But when you run into a good operator, you know it, you know, you can see it.
And that makes sense. Mm-hmm. If it's just, if you guys aren't looking to pick up more work, then it's like, it would have to be worthwhile to do it. But it's always just kind of different, I guess, based off of.
Oh, I would be clear. Like, I think 75-25 is the way. Like, I agree with y'all. Like, I do. Like, we, in the Portland market, there's such an old pinball market, and there's so much competition that, like, I hear people on the East Coast, and they're saying 75-25 or even 80-20. You know, I hear some places in the Midwest where they've had this similar thing where a business owner has approached them, and they're like, and they've reached out to me, and they're like, I think that they don't even want to split as long as I work on the games. And I'm like wow, I can't even imagine that out here. But, you know,
yeah,
it's, the machines are so expensive, and they require expertise to fix. And it's just a lot of fucking work that to make them play right, 100% right all the time, to be motivated to fix them. You know, it's got to cost something, you know, it's not free.
Yeah, if the shop, you know, doesn't want to pay that split, then they can go spend $9,000 on a machine and then figure out how to fix it.
It's 100%.
Yeah. And after you spend $2,000 breaking your machine.
Right.
Yep.
Suddenly the split doesn't look so bad.
No, and not to mention the soft cost of like having people like yourselves that will promote. Like if you were operating somewhere else, you'd be like, these are our machines. They're here. Go check them out at this pizza shop or whatever, it's like you're bringing extra value because you're the type of operators that will throw events and events that people will come to. So like you're bringing not only the machines and making sure they work, but you're also bringing, you know, excitement and a community to it. So
speaking of the, you guys mentioned that you have some games that you don't own in yours, in your place. Do those guys, do they operate anywhere outside of the Bat? Or is it just kind of some regulars that have some, you know, boutique games or whatever there?
Both. So we have our friend Mark, and he has some machines at the Bat. And he also operates out of a brewery. And he's had some machines at some other locations. I don't know if he has any more right now, but he does. But then we have a couple of machines that are just people in the community who buy something that we think would be interesting, or at least interesting for a while, maybe don't want to buy it ourselves. That person would like to stick their toe in the operating pond, and it's a win-win.
I think that's awesome. I mean,
I think that as a fan of, I mean, if you've listened to the podcast at all, you probably know Alan and I's respective feelings on boutique games, and I love playing them, and I love seeing them on location, and Alan fucking hates working on them. So I love seeing like that kind of relationship where it's like, hey, here's something niche. It might not be worth it from a business perspective, but if you're like an enthusiast and you just want to get it and you want to get some money back to kind of offset the depreciation of the game, that's it's kind of a win-win.
Yeah. So Mark owns all of the spookies that are in the back.
Yeah. And he is on his third Scooby-Doo board.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, God. Wow. That's encouraging.
But I did hear on your podcast, for people that haven't listened to it, I did hear that Scooby does very well for you as far as it earns very well on the floor.
Does earn very well.
Huh. I forgot that. I must have just chose to omit that. I listened to that list of you guys talking about your top earners, but...
No, I like listening to your list because if for anyone that's interested, a lot of what y'all do is you'll go through your top earning games. And I feel like when I'm talking to people, they're always interested in like when I'm like, oh, that game fucking earns, or that game's a dog, like that game won't earn anything, right? Like, and people are like, oh, really? Oh, really? And, you know, especially when you get into the stuff that's like surprising, like everyone knows Godzilla earns, like you can go to anywhere and see a Godzilla and there's people playing it all the time. You know, Attack from Mars earns, you know, like people know kind of the basics. But then when I'm like, you know what earns like crazy? Sopranos. Like Sopranos will just earn buckets. Like it just earns like crazy here. You know, we have a couple and every time we move a fucking Sopranos out, we hear about it. Like we just hear about it instantly all the time. And I think people are like, really? That game's not even considered good, is it? And you're like, come to Portland, man. It earns like crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. A game can earn because it's good and a game can earn because of the title. And it can be a total shit show and still make a ton of money.
Yeah, like Galactic Tank Force.
Galactic Tank Force is working-ish.
Nice.
And it is earning very well.
That's cool.
Right.
At least that makes it...
We talk so much shit about them on the podcast, people want to see what it's all about.
Go in, yeah. They got to check it out.
Always a good move. That's going to be, if Rhodes ever picks up a Popeye for Wedgehead, I assume it would do pretty well because everyone would want to see it.
Yeah, people would
rather play Galactic Tank Force than Popeye.
Agreed.
You guys make me want to play Popeye. I think I've only played Popeye once at like a convention somewhere. But you guys make me want to play it again. I'm definitely going to see it.
You got to play it again. You got to see it for yourself. I mean, that's what the Die on the Hill segments are for. Just see for yourself, right? Like, because somebody out there likes it, no matter what you think of it. And that's what I think makes them fun. But yeah, I was going to say, so it sounds like Mark, you have a good relationship with, and he operates some games in your own establishment.
And he also has some technical know-how, right? Because he's operating in a few places, and he's had pinball machines for, I don't know, 30 years or something. Okay. But then we have some other people that, like the people that are new to this, they don't really operate. And we really help kind of maintain their games. If there was like an expensive part that need to be replaced, then we'd probably split costs on that or something. But
yeah.
But all of the normal wear and tear stuff and all of the just keeping it clean playing, all the stuff that you do often, Kale and I take care of.
That's cool.
So what are your like other relationships with the other operators in the region? Do you have mostly good, some bad? Like, I don't want to get into the bad, and we're not here to trash anybody or anything like that, but just do you have other friends that are operators in the Phoenix region? And
we have great relationships with all of the other arcades and operators and in the valley here. I think that's what makes it such a good community. I mean, we send, I think we all send customers to each other's establishments like year round.
I mean, that's awesome. You can see it when I follow you guys or you see it on social media. It's like, I think the time when I was visiting, you couldn't go because you were at another arcade, Starfighters. Is that right? You were there for a tournament.
Yep, we play their tournaments. They're the arcade that is most like ours, where they have a nice mix of modern and classic games. So we really love playing there. And they're not open all the time like we are. They're only open on the weekends. So they do one tournament a month, and we always try to make it.
That's cool.
That's awesome. I mean, we have pretty good relationships with most of the operators in Portland. I mean, we all know each other. It's like sometimes you need parts or just even like, hey, it's doing this weird thing. Have you ever seen this on Indiana Jones or whatever? And, you know, and then somebody else is like, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Certainly.
You know,
yeah,
so
all of the techs, I think we all talk with each other. Anybody that's working on something, we all do the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And most importantly, I mean, we send people to the other tournaments. It's going to help everybody out because as soon as somebody gets into playing a tournament at one arcade, they're like, I wonder what it's like, you know, at Electric Bat or Danger Zone or Starfighters. You know, we're all snowflakes, right? There's no two arcades that are alike.
That's where you're going with the snowflake thing.
And it's a scene. You got to realize, like, when you're building a scene and making a place a pinball city, the community is going to play at the different locations. Like, it's not their customers versus our customers. It's the same pool of customers that kind of populate, you know, kind of go from one to the other.
For sure. And the Valley is every player, even casuals, are focused on Whopper points.
Hmm.
Like, there are no, you know, non-IFPA tournaments that are successful around town.
Which I do find interesting. We have that, you know, Portland's a big scene, so we have weekly, we have tournaments every day of the week. I'm sure you guys are probably close to that at this point, right, in the Phoenix area?
Oh, yeah, we have every single day of the month, sometimes multiple on the same day.
Yep.
Yeah, so we have that in Portland. A big difference between our two arcades is that you guys do a ton of IFPA events and do a ton of, like, big tournaments, and your weekly league that you do on Tuesdays is, you know, you get 100 people or more to show up to your Tuesday nights, which is
that's
massive.
That's awesome.
Like, unreal.
It's kind of bananas. It was last night we had 113.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean,
it's scary.
It's like in Portland, you get that on the big quarterly tournaments or something. You'll get something like that. But there's only a couple places that can even host something that big, you know?
Yep.
There's a couple arcades that are big enough to do that.
Portland has a ton of pinball players. It's obviously a big pinball city, but it really doesn't seem, to respect it for its player base, doesn't seem like that big of a tournament scene compared to some other towns.
It's a big tournament scene. I think it's just we have so many casual bar players.
Yeah.
Because there's been pinball machines on location here, like, and lots of them for 25, 30 years. Like, so it's, you get a lot of people that come in that, they play one game, like they played Theater of Magic since it came out. And so they know that one game, and that's the one game they play, right? Like, or Sopranos is another one. That's why it earned so well. It's like, for whatever reason, like, there were Sopranos around town, and it's like, they fucking earn in Portland. Like, we as Wedgehead, like, we don't really host a lot of IFPA tournaments, which I think is interesting. We found greater success because other arcades already do them in town, and it's just easier to let them do them. And so we run our own casual event, Howdy Partner, but which is massive and regularly outdraws.
That looks like a blast. I've seen lots of photos of that.
It's a raucous time. I had a friend of mine come in on my birthday, and we were running a Howdy Partner, and I got to play in it. And because I'm usually the MC, he came in, and there was just, you know, we were packed like sardines in our small little space, and everyone's like chanting my name, and he's like, what the fuck is going on, dude? Like, he's just like, what is happening? I was like, it's Howdy Partner, man. Like, it's crazy. Like,
it's pretty funny when you have people that don't know what to expect with a Howdy Partner, like a friend brought them or something. And I feel like it's probably one of those things that might be a little overwhelming at first, but it's such a friendly crowd that everyone seems to enjoy it.
Hope you guys get a chance to see it. The what Rachel has built at the Electric Bat, these tournaments. So it's not like, I mean, it is a big party, but you still have top 100 players there. And so many people from out of town have come in and said, this is so refreshing to see like serious, you know, quote unquote, professional pinball players playing with casuals. You know, there's no attitude. Everybody's trying to help each other. So it's a very unique situation. And it sounds very similar to what you guys are doing, except these guys are just fighting for points instead of giant hats.
Yeah, I think what we're doing is the same yet different, like different sides of the coin, which is what I think is interesting because I started Howdy Partner and all that stuff and it's taken off. And I get a lot of people that are like, oh, you're anti. And I want to say this. It's like they're like, you're anti tournaments or you're anti FBA. That is not the case, like at all. Like, it's just people already do that well in town. And the problem with the Portland scene, as I saw it, was there's really great players, but they are the players that don't interact with anybody. They wear hoodies, headphones, don't talk to people, not collaborative, don't share their strategies. And not all of them are like that. Yeah. I'm not saying they're all of them like, but there's a lot of them. And so the serious tournaments get a very weird vibe.
Mm-hmm. Especially when you get down to like the top 16.
Yeah. And there's these great players, but what you have in your scene is what I wanted, or what I saw in LA when I went to visit LA. They have a very similar, very fun scene where people show up and they're drinking and they're having a good time and they're talking to each other and like they're competing and they want to win. But if they don't win, it's not the end of the world, you know?
Right. Like, who cares?
Who cares? Football. Yeah, exactly. And so I felt like I had to do a different format to get that in Portland because it's just, for whatever reason, I'm not quite sure why, but it just wasn't, we couldn't get that with the IFPA tournaments here.
Well, the Howdy Partner looks like a blast, so you're doing something right.
Yeah, we're just trying to get people to play pinball at the end of the day. What anyone's ever doing is like, you know, the whole point is to get people to meet each other. We're all into this weird, arcane hobby, playing pinball, which maybe shouldn't even exist, you know, anymore, but it still does, so it's like, yeah, you know.
Odds.
And I love playing with other people, so like, that's a big thing. It's like, I love playing with other people.
Absolutely.
This is a dumb question, because I should know from following you guys, but what do you have your weekly league nights? Do you have weekly, like, Whopper tournaments there, or what's the schedule like usually?
It's a six-week league, so your best four nights count, and if you have to go to at least three to have your points submitted.
Gotcha.
So there's a winner every Tuesday, and they get, you know, some prize, and then we have finals based on the top 24 out of the 6 week series.
Okay.
Yeah. And the last Sunday of every month, our friend Chewy does his Chewy's world famous bounty knockout tournament. It's a four strike knockout tournament where you can actually get bounties. So when you knock somebody out, you get a poker chip that's worth $5.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, you can actually not win and just win a bunch of money. Or I've actually gone all the way to the finals and not won any money. But,
yeah, that sounds fun.
That's fun. What?
Yeah,
gambling on pinball's fun.
Interesting. We do. We have like 17 machines that are on Stern Insider connected, and we pick the winner of that across all machines. It gets to pick a Stern Translite or a Stern Banner. And then we also do the cash tournaments on the Stern machines where, you know, you install the little tournament button.
Yep.
And
those are always fun too.
Yeah. So we have all that going on.
But if I'm coming down there, if I want to buy a cheap ticket to Phoenix while it's still cold here, what day of the month do I want to hit? What's like the one?
Tuesday.
Tuesday?
You want to be here on a Tuesday night. Yeah.
You can play in the league.
Just drop in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, totally.
That's good. Okay. I'm just saying, Alan, tickets are very cheap to Phoenix right now. And I know.
I don't want to go to the bounty tournament, though. I like the gambling part of it.
I do too. Oh,
we'll do both. Maybe just show up for the last Sunday and then stay.
Oh, yeah.
Stay
through Tuesday. Yeah.
Okay.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've also started having people, like players, want to get into hosting tournaments. So we've had a few people hosting just some very casual tournaments, like, you know, they want to do it for their own birthday party or some kind of celebration.
That's
or
cool
people
too.
Wanting to try more complicated or interesting formats. Just like, hey, let's see how this works. And we've got the machines and we're happy to help you, you know, navigate running something as long as we think it will be fun. Or
yeah, we do that too. I mean, the tournaments that we do run, the IFPA tournaments that happen once a month, or we just started a women's tournament by some regulars that wanted to host a women's only tournament. And yeah, it's the same thing. Regulars that want a space to do something, I was like, absolutely, you know, 100%. Yes, and it's been good.
You mentioned because you just have the machines or whatever, which just made me think, the games that you guys have, I think that's a big part of why your tournaments actually look fun to me, is because you have a huge variety of games and you have a lot of classics and stuff. How do you kind of maintain that balance? I don't know what I'm specifically asking. Just, are there any kind of like surprises or lessons learned from having that mix? And I know it's kind of a common knowledge that the classics never earn as well, but are there any big surprise earners or anything like that?
Yeah, well, I mean, Kayla and I both love playing classics, so we have them there whether they earn or not because we like them.
Yeah.
Answer.
Yep.
But then, like, 8-Ball, not even 8-Ball Deluxe, for some reason, I think just because of the brutality of the play, that game earns better than Twilight Zone.
Wow.
Yeah, I would say that I will agree that when we were on Coin Play, Twilight Zone doesn't earn. For as much as people say that they love that game,
we should give like any like WPC era game, like this game, 8-Ball just happens to earn a ton.
That's
relative
awesome.
To games that are most people would consider better, or certainly much more popular games.
We did a whole episode on the Bally Williams Super Pins, and we covered them. And it's funny, we're asking people around, and Twilight Zone's the best rated of them. The one that when we were reached out, it's, you know, everyone's like, yeah, Twilight Zone's the best one. And I think it's so funny because the casual people or the average person that comes in is going to put their quarters in the machine. You know, we changed our model. We're a free play model now. But when we used to do coin op, it was hilarious. You know, I was just like, dude, this thing is, it's not earning for its reputation for how expensive it is and how cool of a game it is. Because I think it's an excellent game. I think most people think that, but it just didn't earn.
When did you guys switch over and why?
Yeah, so we switched over in COVID. We did, you know, our municipality, our county was really aggressive, like really aggressive in shutting all business down, which was, so we did a private thing where they you know, like we can only have like 20% of the people inside. Mm-hmm. And so we did private rooms for a little while. And we did that with, so we're like, hey, come in for an hour. You'll have a private room. We'll sanitize it in between guests and all that kind of stuff. And we'll put a couple of pinball machines in there and they're on free play, you know? So mm-hmm. as long as you spent a small minimum during that hour on food and drink while you were there, the pinball was all free.
Mm-hmm.
Like true free play. Like we weren't even charging for it.
That was pretty sweet.
Yeah, that was an interesting setup. And then when we got kind of out of it and were able to open, I was pushing for it. There's only one Next Level out in Hillsboro, which is a mega location. They got like 250 pinball machines. It was just something that we do so many events at Wedgehead. Like people want to have their company parties, their birthday parties, mm-hmm. graduations, and all that kind of stuff. And every time we do a big event, everyone wants the games on free play because they want to be able to be like, hey, come on in, just play. Right? Like lots of like super casual. And as you know, as an operator, it's like, man, if you had to go through and like turn all those games on and off free play, fuck that. Like forget that.
Right.
Yeah. That's a lot.
Horrible. Yeah. We made the choice to move, which I have on this list. I'm glad you asked because I wanted to talk about the different ways that arcades charge for, you know, mm-hmm. their games. And so y'all do token play. Can you explain
tokens
why?
Tokens and quarters.
And quarters.
How does that work?
Yeah, the mechs take both.
Oh wow.
Oh, shit.
I didn't realize that.
What's the incentive for getting tokens? Do you do tokens at a discount or something?
Tokens, you can win a 25-cent beer in the token machine.
Okay.
So people do that. Also, people just like tokens and don't often have pockets full of quarters, so it's much easier to convert your $10 bill into some tokens in our token machines.
Oh, yes, I see. You only dispense tokens, but you will take quarters as well.
Correct.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay,
that's cool.
We did tokens over quarters for a bunch of reasons. One is I didn't want to have a bunch of quarters sitting in machines. Just that seemed like a little bit of a target. And then also I didn't want to have a quarter dispensing change machine because I didn't want to be the way that people provided like their laundry money and then just...
Yeah,
me having to go to the bank every day.
Everyone walking out with like $5 a quarters in their pockets that you have to go exchange for them now.
Exactly. And then also whenever I opened the arcade, tokens were much cheaper than they are now. So basically a token cost me at the time like 12 cents each. So if you're paying 25 cents for it, it doesn't necessarily matter if it leaves the building.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was going to say is like you can buy tokens for less than the face value of a quarter as a business operator, but to the customer, mm-hmm. it doesn't cost them any more money. So it's like a win-win of the pricing thing, right? Because the customer, it doesn't matter. They're like, okay, one quarter, one token, whatever. And so it's a great way to get, because these games are expensive. Like, we need to clarify this to anyone that would ever be listening and doesn't realize it. But I mean, I know that I put in huge parts orders every week, or, you know, twice a month, and we work on the games. And that was my big thing with the model that we chose, was like, we were on coin play, like quarter play. And I was telling my business partner, I was like, we either got to do tokens or we got to do free play. We got to figure out a way, because then the other way is a card system, which I'm sure some people have seen. I think is the least popular way to do it.
It's like my personal nemesis is card systems.
Yeah.
Same.
The ones that convert it to credits, and it's not a direct
one-to-one. So credits per.
It's like you put in like, it's like $12 for 18,000. Well, that would actually be pretty easy. It's like some arbitrary amount of money for an arbitrary amount of credits. And then the games are all odd numbers of credits. And it makes it genuinely impossible to sit there and do the math and figure out how much you're paying per game, which is obviously.
It's obfuscating it. And it's very expensive to start up. I will say that, you know, if you're, Kate, it does give you some flexibility. I know there's an episode that y'all did on your podcast where you covered this in depth. So we'll just point the listeners to check out your back catalog if they want to learn more about the card system, because you did a deep dive on it, how much it cost, and why you would or would not want to do it. I don't personally have anything against the card system. I'm here to play whatever. However a business wants me to pay, I don't really care. You know, I do wish that credits would be to the quarter. I mean, just make it obvious. Like, make it to the quarter.
I just want to also say, before I get done hating on them, is that the card readers are always ugly. And I don't know why they have to have them strobing RGB and have like a big backlit screen, but it really ruins the vibe of like a classic arcade look.
Yeah.
And that's...
Yes, I cannot stand seeing those on a classic Bally. I mean, I want to pull out a crowbar and my hair
You're just like, off. What in the Dave and Buster's fucking hell is this shit on my Bally? Like, I just, I know there's like, there's some great locations that use them. And sometimes it does fit in with the vibe if you got a very like bright neon kind of place. But I just, they get under my skin. So I'm always happy to see tokens. But the one thing that neither of you guys, I'm surprised, have mentioned is that the card readers and free play, you don't got to deal with coin jams.
Yeah, we don't have to deal with coin jams. Yeah. So I want to get into this next question, which is, what are your operator pet peeves from customers, from players, or just from owning an arcade?
My number one pet peeve is people using other arcades tokens in our machines.
Yep.
Because that's just shoplifting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the, you know, we did like a whole episode on this. And the funny, this was like one of the first episodes we did. And the funny thing was, after we did it, we stopped getting so many foreign tokens.
There you go.
That makes you, people the customers, must not realize.
They don't know. They think, okay, I just purchased something that is a quarter.
Yeah.
Like to them, that's a quarter. That's 25 cents. That represents a partial credit on some type of amusement machine. They throw it all in their pocket. And when they leave, they probably put it in the console of their car, and it's mixed up with all other stuff. It's nothing malicious, but, you know, they don't realize. And it's not just us.
If
there are machines in an arcade where like someone else is operating them and there's a split, if they come into our arcade and they use somebody else's token, we're literally paying for their game.
Because we pay the operator based on audits. So that comes out of my pocket. So that, yeah.
That's...
But like Kale said, it's generally not malicious. It's just that people don't really think about it. But I would love for them to think about it and not do it.
Yeah, it's impressive that it went down after your podcast episode. That's kind of encouraging, because you're like, okay, at least people, it's like ignorance then.
Well, I think a lot of these things are the same way. It's why people, as dumb as this is, but putting drinks on the glass, people don't think about it. They're not like, hey, let's fuck this up, or let's throw my coat over this machine or whatever. It's, they're just ignorant. They're not thinking. They're in an arcade. Sure. It's loud. They're like excited probably. And they're not using 100% of their brain all the time.
Yeah. And I think our other biggest pet peeve is abusing the machine. We have liberal tilts, and we don't mind, you know, you can move the machine a few inches, but just like after you drain, banging the glass, like something like that. Like, we, you know, these machines can take a little beating, and we're totally okay with a heavy slap save or what have you, but just like a just smacking the lockdown bar after you drain, just stuff like that.
Totally.
Yeah, just like raging after you drain. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the same. I don't know. That's always been the same. It's like I grew up playing like online video games, right? And it's like you'd always have mm-hmm. one friend that would just lose his shit when he dies in Call of Duty or something.
And you're like, yeah, 12 like, broken controllers.
Yeah. And you're like, exactly. The ones, if you, it's like, is one thing to like, it's like we're all human and you have emotions or whatever, but it's like once you're breaking controllers, you're like going too far. You're like, hey, buddy, you got to like think about this. And it's like the guys that get that mad, like playing pinball, you're like, man, we're playing pinball.
Yeah, it's supposed to be fun. And you're ruining the vibe as much as like whatever it does to the machine. And then there's also just like, people don't want to be around that, man. Like, people are here to have a good time. Like,
yeah,
for sure.
Chill out, dude. Yeah. Like, and I would just want to bring this up because we spoke about it off the air and we alluded to it earlier in this episode. But we did an episode and some of our advice was, hey, don't complain about setup. Like, that's a big one to us. It's like the way somebody sets up their games is the way they set up their games. And I think you reached out, and the reason why we're doing this now is you were like, hey, thanks for saying something about the pitch level, because we hear that shit all the time, and like it annoys us too. And I heard that from a lot of operators.
So funny.
Here's a good one that you will appreciate. We have a like a clipboard where you can write down if you notice something not working on a game. And someone wrote down that our medieval madness was at 6.8 degrees.
What?
And I may have the numbers wrong, but they gave me a specific, like, this is the something point something degrees.
Per inside.
They didn't say per what, we all know. And it should be at, what, you know, 6.5 degrees, please change it. And I'm thinking, number one, there's no fucking way you could have.
Yeah, did you measure the glass?
Know? Because there's you did it on the glass.
You did on the glass, probably on your phone on an app.
Yeah, and he's trying to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
And number two, you're just wrong.
Yes. I want to squash that.
That one was funny because it was so specific. And there was like the tone of the note was like, you need to fix this now. How dare you call yourself a pinball arcade?
It's like,
and you're, you know, 0.3 degrees too steep.
It's like a little kid trying to lie and they get really specific with like the numbers or something.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, you're just making this shit up right now, right?
They don't.
And this is why I could not make the ramps in front of my girlfriend.
Yes. We're going to do another episode on this, but there's another one. And I heard you guys mention it one time. You answered a question and this was my moment to y'all, which was, I was like, yes, they said it. Like, and I hear about flipper fade on Sterns. And just the utter bullshit, like, of like what people are talking about. Like, people come into this and like, I can't make that ramp. You know, it's the flippers are fading. You need these $300 fans on them. And I'm just like, that's insane, dude.
You got to put a whole mini split on the side of like a whole AC unit on the side of Godzilla.
It's crazy because it's like, man, they are the biggest manufacturer. They've been, those mechs have been more or less the same since the Data East days. Mm-hmm. And they're super snappy. Like, if anyone's complaining about Stern flippers of any flipper, flipper, you're complaining about Stern flippers is crazy. I mean,
right.
And they'll talk to you. And when people start, I'll just be like, just hold on. Like, you know, like, don't ask me if we put fans. We don't need fans, dude. You ever watch Keith Ellen play on a stream for an hour and a half? He has no problem making all those shots. You know what I mean? Like, anyway.
The flipper fade, man. That's why I'm embarrassing myself in front of all the girls.
Yeah. Yep. And that's
that
why you...
In the, you guys, I'm sure, also get the one where your game is not level because the bubble is not in the middle.
Yeah.
That's not even...
The bubble levels.
That's not how that works.
Yes.
That's not what it's for. Even if it was precise, that's not what that's for.
Yeah. People will say all kinds of stuff, and... Again, most of it, I chalk it up to, like, we did that episode where it's like, hey, you're new to pinball. Like, here's some stuff that we were probably very annoying about when we first got into it. Yeah. And we don't want you to be those people that write on the clipboard at the electric bat, hey, this is at 6.8 degrees. Please make it 6.5. Like, don't do that. You know, don't be that person. Like, it's just like, because especially when you're going to the bat, you're going to a world-class pinball location. You know, you're going to a place where you have great machines of all eras and you guys take great care of them. And you foster a great pinball community. So it's like, if you're going to go into a place like that and be like, these games are set up wrong, you're out of your mind. You know what I mean? It's like, wait till you play some real hard location stuff.
You're like, you got to go play some shit, and then you'll never complain about any of the actual pinball locations again.
Yeah, any of the real ones.
It's just great, though.
I think we covered it pretty well. This was just an operator spotlight series of some cool operators that we respect and follow. And that if you're ever traveling through the Phoenix area, make sure you stop. Or if you're in Flagstaff, stop at their other location. But in case we didn't cover anything, what do you feel makes the electric bat so unique in the Arizona pinball landscape?
Cal Hernandez. He's there all the time being funny and awesome. And doing all of our social media.
Thank you.
Kind of on that note, I think really our personalities come through. We are there all the time. We were there playing with, you know, we came home from playing Jaws. We just set up Jaws today with some friends. It's our home too.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And I mean, this is our job. We are 100% into this. This isn't something, you know, we just set up and then we go to some, you know, desk job somewhere else. We truly care about this. And like today, you know, we got the call that Jaws just came in. So we got in the truck, went, set it up for our friends to play, and then, you know, came back home to do this podcast. You know, we didn't do it for us. We're doing this so everybody can enjoy this wonderful hobby and sport. That's definitely what separates us from, you know, the big box arcades.
Yeah, I agree.
And to be clear, our distributor would have come tomorrow or the next day and dropped it off and set it up for us. It would have saved us a lot of labor. But we wanted to go, like, we were excited to play it and see it and share it with everybody. So we made the drive out there and did the heavy lifting so that we could all enjoy it.
Yeah, you guys clearly love pinball, and the place reflects that. And I think that's what makes it so special. And I think that's what we're kind of seeing recurring with the operators and the locations that we love and we want to go visit or have visited. It, the people that love pinball make good pinball spots. So just love to see it.
Yeah, I think we're in a renaissance period of really cool arcades across the country and across the world. And you are definitely one of them. And I love the electric bat. And I think you guys have like a crazy following. I mean, everyone knows who you are. So you guys are doing a great job down there and you're doing something right. And I think that's a big part is like you build a great community and they support you and they're ride or die. So.
Well, thank you. And we see Wedgehead shirts, you know, our players wear Wedgehead shirts too. So right back at you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's funny. We do a lot of merch. So the merch is, it's a trip to see it. I'm sure you, even with as well as you know people, I still see people. I'm there every day like you guys are. I'm opening games and playing games with regulars and all that kind of stuff. And I still will see people at the grocery store wearing a Wedgehead shirt and I'll be like, I don't even know who that is. Like, and they
Isn't
don't know who I am. Like, it's such a trip. Like, it's so weird. Yeah, I want to thank you all for joining us on this episode of the Wedgehead Pinball Podcast. It was a pleasure having you on the podcast, and hopefully we'll get to speak again in the future. For everyone listening, go out and play some pinball. That's what I say at the end of every episode. Go support your local operators. If you live in the Phoenix area, you already know about the electric bat, but just go there again. You know you need to go back. It's probably been a few hours. Right? Like, so go back and support them, put some tokens in.
Yeah, the right tokens.
The right tokens. You know, leave that other trash at home. And for everyone else, you know, go out, support your local operator, have a good time, play some pinball. Until next time, good luck. Don't suck.
I'm Batman.